Welcome to Picnic Climbers, a podcast for those who love getting outside,
going on epic adventures,
or chill ones,
and don't take themselves too seriously. Join us, Nate and Mo,
as we share our escapades into the great outdoors.
And don't forget the beer, eh? Hello, listener. Welcome to the Picnic Climbers podcast. We have a treat and a half for you today. I am going to be speaking to a woman that I admire greatly for her courage and strength. She is an accomplished ultramarathon runner, crushing distances beyond what many people deem acceptable, all with a smile on her face. She has been described as the happiest ultra runner I've ever seen and blows me away with her humble attitude. Ladies and gentlemen, I am excited to introduce Monica Willett, ultra running's happiest retired warrior woman. Da-da-da-da! How are you doing, Mo?
Oh my goodness, he wouldn't let me read that beforehand. That was quite the intro, honey, thank you.
You're very
welcome. Wow, I don't even know what to say to that. How am I doing? I'm sore today.
You're sore? Okay, what have you done?
You guys, yesterday I went on a run for the second time in a long, long time.
Second time since having a baby.
Yes, I did have a baby 3 months ago. Yeah, so I'm about 14 weeks postpartum, and I went for like a 2 kilometer run last week. So last night I thought I'd give it a go, and like the 2K went okay, so I thought maybe I'll go a bit further. So Nathan described a route that could be around like, what, 3-4K?
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah, I would imagine about 3 kilometers.
So like barely longer, and it was gonna be great, and it was gonna take me 20 minutes, and I jokingly said as I left the house, like, if I'm not back in 25 minutes, come find me, kind of thing. Totally joking. But then I go, and if you know me at all, you will know that I have a terrible sense of direction.
And when rather ironic, seeing as you got a geography degree.
It's really bad. I turn one corner and I have no idea where anything is in relation to me. So anyway, I thought I was following his instructions, but I think I made one right turn when I should have made a left turn. And after that, obviously, everything was opposite to what it should have been in my head. So I went the exact opposite way and couldn't find my way back. And it was getting dark, and we haven't lived here that long. And I was tired, and anyway, ran more than 3K and eventually found my way to a road I recognized and made it back home.
You said 25 minutes. Come get me. I think at 35 minutes, I was putting Rowan into the car seat.
Yeah, I got home, opened the door, and you were like dressed and
ready to come find you.
Which, of course, he would have looked in the exact opposite direction than I was because anyway.
Moral of the story, what did we learn?
We learned to not ever go running ever.
Or just take your phone with us.
The whole point of going for a run, though, is to like just get away and clear my head.
Yeah.
Because like I go for a walk and I'll take Rowan because I can and he should have fresh air. But I feel like, well, running, I can't take him. We don't have a running buggy yet. So it's just like, just, you know, 20 minutes, just me and the fresh air. And I don't need my phone and I don't need anything and I'll just do it. But that did not work out. Anyway, I came home, took off my my hat, and I think cried on the stairs for a little while.
Yeah.
And then poor baby was also very upset because he was hungry and his food truck was running all around the neighborhood.
So, I think he was upset because you were upset.
I think he did pick up.
To calm him down.
Yeah, I mean, my body was hurting. I was not ready to run as far as I ran. My hips and my knees. Anyway, I walked downstairs like an old woman, and we'll probably take a week off again. So there you go.
So despite this,
welcome to the running podcast.
Running story. So we're gonna talk today about Monica's journey from running 5 kilometers to running 50 kilometers in one go. You might be sat there thinking, well, I thought these guys were talking about being picnic climbers and being chill and being laid back, and all of a sudden they're going to talk about running 50 kilometers in a day. And yes, we are, but we're also going to try and make the case that ultra running is very, and picnic climbing can go hand in hand.
Oh, ultra running is probably the chillest kind of running.
I think my favourite way of describing ultra running, or favourite way I've heard ultra running be described, is an eating and drinking contest with a little bit of exercise thrown in. So we'll be able to unpack that a little bit as we go. But we're going to talk to Monica, and we're going to hear her story and her journey, some of the highs and lows, some of the successes and the things that got her to become an ultra warrior woman.
Oof. Let's dive in. Go,
so
Nathan.
To begin with then, were you much of a runner beforehand? Like before we were considering ultras, before you this was even on your radar, what experience had you had as a runner before?
Okay, yeah. So I was a very casual runner beforehand. When I was in high school, I would run with my mom, who's very short and has tiny legs. I would keep her company on runs, and we had about a 7K loop that we did a couple times a week.
And how long would that take you?
45 minutes ish.
Okay.
Fast. No, it was really hilly. Like we lived in the mountains of British Columbia, so it was really hilly. But we just kind of puttered along and we'd chat. It was kind of our mom and daughter time. So yeah, I ran, I guess. When I got to uni, I continued running, I guess, and I wanted to do Sun Run, which is a really fun run in Vancouver. It's 10K, and I thought that was like, whew, 10K, can I do it kind of thing. So I ran home from university a couple times a week, like just with my backpack on, I'd take a change of clothes, and that was about 7K as well. And then I had a loop around the beach that was about 5 to 7K, depending on kind of when I came back or whatever, which roads I took. So casual, like maybe once or twice a week, and I would take my sweet time, and if there was a sunrise I would stop and watch it, and I never timed myself really, and I'd like take stretching breaks, and it was very much just getting out there. So my first real event was the Sun Run, which I did the first time, and so it was 10K around the city, and I did it in 56 minutes. And I was really happy with that.
Yeah, that's really good.
Was really happy with that. And then I convinced a good friend of mine who wasn't a runner to train with me for that again. And so I ran with her the second time. And that was a lot of fun. So I've done that twice. And that was kind of like, oof, peak of my running career. I thought 10K, that's really far. I'm good with that.
So was that the longest distance that you'd run beforehand, 10 kilometers?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd only ever run that twice on the race days, and everything else, like all my training runs were 7-8 kilometers. I remember talking to somebody who was training for a half marathon leading up, and I was like, I'm not sure if I can do it. I've never run that far. Like, what if I just get to 7 kilometers and just collapse? She's like, you'll be fine. And I drew so much energy from the crowd. Like, I loved it. And that 56 minutes, that was my fastest pace ever. Like, I didn't ever get that fast in my training runs. I'm really an extrovert, and that really comes out on race days. Like, I literally just suck energy from all the people around me, and I felt like I was flying, and I thought it was the most fun I've ever had running.
The Sun Run's a special event as well, though, isn't it? Because what you say, oh, it's just another city 10K run. But no, I mean, you're 50,000, 60,000 runners. It's one of the few races where they actually send out the race t-shirts ahead of time. So you've got everybody wearing the same shirt on the day. Every kilometer, they've got a band set up. It's
and
really,
so many
really
people
special.
Come support and have funny signs. And then, you are just running through a dense crowd. So, like, I feel like if I stopped running, I would just get carried along with the crowd. It was very
busy. Awesome. It's such a good event.
And, like, kids do it, and older people, and people do it in costume. It's an event. Yeah, so fun.
Cool.
So that's it.
So what, kind of from that point then, what on earth inspired you to sign up for an ultra?
You did, Nathan.
Oh, oops.
You did.
I thought it was your idea.
It was entirely your fault. Eventually, I'm sure we'll get on here and tell Nathan's story into running, which is much more impressive than mine. He just became like a genius runner overnight, it seems.
I did not become a genius runner. I became like
obsessed,
an obsessive runner.
Yeah.
Over a one idea, and it was trail ultramarathons.
Oh my goodness!
And I think there was several months which, whenever I wasn't working or whenever we weren't talking about anything else, my mind was on running.
He was obsessed.
And ultra running, and I was wanted to find all the right races to do.
And it literally started when we like landed in the UK, essentially, like in the first week. So we moved to the UK in June 2018. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And your cousin dragged us off on a run that was meant to be 5K and turned into 15, and neither of us could walk up the stairs the next day. So that was the longest I've ever run. Anyway, this started you off on your journey. I won't tell that story.
Yeah, we won't talk about it.
But he pretty much was obsessed with running from June and onwards, and would just do it all the time and talk about it and think about it. And he started listening to running podcasts, and he would talk my ear off about all these ultras, and he just immersed himself in the world immediately and started looking for races and was obsessed with the idea of running like 100 kilometers. And I just thought, that is insane. That is insane. I thought he was so stupid. Like, who does that to themselves? Who does that to their bodies? Like, I just did not understand. I mean, like, I thought 10K was a lot. But he was so involved in this world all of a sudden. And I felt like I was kind of losing him a little bit. He would just run all the time. And we've always done our hobbies together. Like, we talked a little bit about how, well, you got me into climbing. And we started doing that together. And you're the one that kept me in it. And and all of a sudden, you had this new hobby. And you were going nuts. Anyway, Christmas 2018, over to New Year's 2019, we went to Canada, and we had a rainy morning, and we decided to go for a run together. And I think we went 4 kilometers, and I couldn't make it the whole way without...
Can I just go back a little bit actually? Sorry. Before we talk about that run in Canada, because you'd already signed up for
had
the ultra by that point.
Up?
So if you remember, it was
I thought it came after this. Go on.
No, it didn't. So I signed up for this. There was this 50K that was the one that Monica ended up running in South Wales. It was perfect. It was cheap. It was quite close to where my grandparents lived, and it was described as the best first ultra for people. We at the time were doing a teaching course, and so we had a training day at university, and it was me, it was you, and it was our other friend who all sat around, and I was telling him about this ultra that I'd signed up for, and he was sat there thinking, you know, you're kind of, it's kind of crazy. But it's also really interesting. He was kind of into the into pushing himself and endurance events as well. And you two sat there and you looked at each other and you said, basically, I'll do it if you do it.
And it was a joke. Yes, I remember
and
that.
Then I think
fully intending to not do it.
Yeah, and then I think I went home and I signed you up.
Oh, yeah. I was definitely going to mention that. I did not sign my own self up. Nathan signed me up. He filled out the entire form and pestered me for like a week and was like, I'm going to submit it. I'm going to submit it. And finally, one day, without thinking, I was like, oh, fine, whatever. I'll do it. James will do it. We'll just do it. And he just clicked the submit form. Like, it had just sat there ready. And he's like, okay, you're doing it. You're doing it. And I didn't know what to think.
So that was getting you signed up. Sorry, carry on with this run Vancouver.
You're right. So you signed me up before I started training. I hadn't run in ages.
What's the best motivation? Oh, like, you have to sign up for something. That's what will get you out running.
Okay, so yeah, my first official training run, I suppose, was in Vancouver, in some trails close to where we were staying, and I couldn't make it 4K without stopping, and it felt bad, and it was rainy, and I was on holiday, and therefore had eaten so much the day before, and I just got back and I think, oh my goodness, I cannot run 4 kilometers. How on earth am I supposed to run 50? And that was January, so that was New Year's.
January.
And this run was the 1st of May. Oh no, the 5th of May. So right at the beginning of May, I had 5 months to get from, I say 5 to 50, it was 4 to 50. I couldn't even do 4.
You had 4 months. January, February, March, April.
Oh yeah, maths. 4 months, maths. Oh, numbers. Okay, moving on. So yeah, not a lot of time to prep. So we got home and I thought, okay, my goal is not to do well. My goal is to survive. So it was one of my New Year's resolutions, because why not just put something there you're already planning to do? So I think then we had some Christmas money to spend, and we went out and bought ourselves 4 pairs of running shoes between the two of us. So a good pair of road runners and a good pair of trail runners. And little race backpacks, and training began.
Yeah.
So it was your fault.
Okay,
I never would have done this.
I'm sorry. but I'm proud of you. So what did your training look like?
What did my training look like? Well, we just ran, didn't we?
That's generally considered good training.
So you did all the research and all the prep and all the kind of the thinking and the planning. So you kind of came up with a race or a training plan. I dipped in and out of it. So I think we were planning to do a few runs a week of varying lengths. So kind of 2 or 3, depending on how long they were. So we kind of would do between like 7-8 was our shorter one and 13 was our longer one throughout the week.
And so that would be during the week we'd go for the kind of the shorter.
And road, and just on the road, yeah, kind of from our doorway. But then once, at least once on the weekend, and by the end, both weekend days, we would drive out to trails. So most of the time we went to this place called Clent Hills and we would do like a big trail run. So our loop was only 13 kilometers, but it had a lot more elevation and it was often really muddy or like fields and roots and all that kind of thing. So training, like you want to run on trail to get your ankles and everything stronger. So we would
They say one of the best things that you can do is it's called specificity. So you're running the type of surface that you're going to be doing your event, your race on, just because there are so many, when you're trail running, so many little muscles and little things that you don't know that'll hurt on the day if you don't train on some sort of specific terrain.
Yeah, so we would just run, but I'm very much a fair weather runner, so anytime it would rain I'd be like, I'll skip this one. My training wasn't probably picture perfect or anything.
It's quite fun. I've been looking at your Strava of the time. Mm-hmm. And you.
What is Strava for those people who aren't running nerds?
Strava is the world's best social media app.
Oh my goodness.
No, so it basically it's just Strava is an activity app where you can just keep track of your runs or cycles or basically any other sport. You can follow people and see what your mates are up to. But you named all of your runs, and it's one of my favorite things looking at all the names of your runs. Here's one from the 12th of February, so about a month in. Am I fit yet was the name of that one. That was just over 10 kilometers. Then a month later, on the 5th of March, I should probably run more. What else did we have? Oh, here's one on the 18th of April. Oof, hot running. Which was, we were in Singapore at that time. That was our Easter break.
I almost died.
It was very hot. But having a look through, you did, over the 4 months, you did about 30 training runs.
Which does not sound like a lot.
Which doesn't sound like a lot. But
there you go. You could get from 4K to 50 in 30 training runs.
Yeah, you managed it and you did amazingly well. So next question, kind of about your training. So you mentioned that you avoided training in the wet weather days. I'm pretty sure I did drag you out on some wet weather days.
Oh, you definitely did. I mean, think of our training months, January to
May.
April, yeah.
Were you happy in training and did you enjoy the training?
No and no. No, I hated it. Oh, I hated it. I would complain every day and I would text Nathan throughout the day if it was raining and going, we are not training today. And then he would drag me out. And sometimes I'd like sit on the edge of the bed in my running outfit and just be like, oh, I am so mad at you.
You would use any and every single tool at your disposal to try to convince me to not go on the run after work.
Yeah, because I couldn't let him run and me stay at home because then I would feel guilty. But if both of us sat on the couch, it was okay. So I was so miserable. I didn't enjoy it. To be fair, the first few months were really hard for many reasons. I think I hadn't been running at all. Like we'd been climbing and that was the only exercise really I was getting. We were in a really intense season of trying to learn to be teachers and doing this course and whatever. So I just, I wasn't fit at all, first of all. So it just felt hard and I hadn't done it, but also it was cold and wet and rainy and I would not recommend anybody starting to run in January in the UK. So when it got to March, I think the sun was coming out more, it was warmer. Also, I was a bit more fit. And so these runs they felt better, and I didn't hurt huge. So much. My lungs didn't burn mm-hmm. as much. And I started feeling like, okay, maybe I could do this. I think also it was that threat of 50 kilometers.
It was more imminent.
Yeah. If I came back from an 8-kilometer run and I found it hard, I would just have this impending sense of doom. Like, I found 8 kilometers hard. How am I going to do 50 on trail? And I was just really worried about embarrassing myself and not making it and having to be like picked up. Like, I was really worried if I actually could do it or not.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I had no intention of doing well. It was just...
just survive. Yeah. Crazy. One more question about training. Sure. But I want to get on to obviously talking about the event. But, like, I think it's pretty self-explanatory that over time, your body will be able to do longer and longer runs. And so you can run more per week. And I guess you slowly built up from that first 4-kilometer run to kind of, yeah, to being able to run 10K on the weekend fairly happily and all. But one of the things that I think sets ultra training apart from, like, just, you know, preparing for like a 10K road run is some of the specific big training days mm-hmm. that you only do maybe once a month or once every 3 weeks or so. So what were some of the things that you did, like the really big training days that maybe someone would want to know about if they were thinking of doing something similar?
Right. Okay. So yeah, half of our training was just running lots. One of the biggest things you want to do for ultra training is running on tired legs, which just sucks. Like, it's just not a fun time. But the nice thing about ultra running is it's not fast. And I think this is why the main reason it qualifies under picnic climbing outdoor ethos is it really is just a jog that takes a long time.
Yeah.
Like, we would on our longer runs have a rule. Like, if we couldn't easily talk to each other, we were going too fast.
Yeah.
We would often think, oh, if we're out of breath, I'm running too fast. So we would try to slow down. And so we just had some good conversations. And so we'd take along snacks and we'd have stops and we'd look at the scenery and just kind of take our time. And it would just feel like a big day out. So I think we had I think 3 or 4 big days. That's it, really. So there was a few times in Clent Hills that we would just kind of either lap ourselves.
Like just up and down the big hill, right?
Up and down the big hill. So that was one day. We did that once, just up and down, up and down, up and down this massive hill. And you ran and I walked the entire time, just walked up and down a hill, which wasn't the most fun, but it was kind of funny. We would pass each other and I just listened to music and it was fine. So that was our hill training day. And then we did a distance training. Which was just, we ran 30 kilometers, I think, in one go around Clent. And most of that was because we got lost. I think the plan was 25. And then we ended up doing farther. Yeah. Man, getting lost really pushes you. And then one time we did a road, like the longest road run we did was a half marathon-ish.
Well, the goal for that day was I wanted to run 50 kilometers in one day, spread out over the day, and your goal was 35. So I got up in the morning and I did 15, and then I came back and we had, like, I think you'd gotten up at that point, you had breakfast, we did some stuff in the morning, and then we went out and did a half marathon together, we came back, couple more hours just kind of chilling and doing whatever, and then in the evening we went out and we did another 14 kilometers and that got me up to 50 and you up to 35 for the day,
which is the longest I'd ever run before the race.
Oh yeah.
So we did a 30 trail and 35-ish on the roads. So those were kind of the 3 big days, and I think we did another big trail day that wasn't quite as big, but pretty much did a few to make sure that our legs could handle the distance, and running on tired legs kind of thing. And so often we'd do back-to-back runs as well. Like, we'd do 15K in the hills on Saturday and then another 15 in the hills on Sunday. So our weeks, if you add it all together, the kilometers were higher.
So moving on towards race day then, how did you feel leading up to the day, kind of like the week before, the day before, day of?
Well, I was just excited and nervous, I think, which is pretty fair. I remember the day before I was quite nervous and you're like, well, let's just go stretch our legs a bit. So we did a 2K around, and it felt great. Obviously it was a 2K, and I wore my race backpack and kind of practiced packing, and so there was a lot of nerves. I was also excited because we'd managed to coerce a few other friends from our teaching program to run it with us. So it was quite a party, really. Like, the three of us went down in a car and we met two others So there was this big group. There's a hilarious picture of this five guys standing in a row smiling until you look closely and you realize that Tiny Me is sandwiched amongst them.
Oh, yeah.
They were all so tall, like 6 feet, and then me. Anyway, it was a good time. So yeah, I was excited, I guess. We'd done a lot of prep with the food, and I had my fancy new trail shoes to wear, and just like it was a road trip to Wales and we're gonna see your grandparents, so we kind of made a weekend out of it, which was exciting. I still had no idea if I could do it. Like there was definitely a lot of like, well, I guess we'll just see how it goes. Like,
but I think that's what makes it amazing, isn't it? That's the beauty of it. You didn't know how it was gonna go, and it's,
no.
It's that's what I think why ultra running is so cool, because it does test your limits.
Yeah I had worked on my mental game quite a bit, which I think is just as important as physical training is mental training. Like, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how far, or I mean how fit you are, it's gonna hurt, because it's just a long way and we're not used to going that far, so something's gonna hurt. Like, probably won't get blisters because you've got good shoes or whatever, but like your ankles hurt, your knees hurt, your hips hurt, your muscles hurt, your lungs hurt, your back ends up hurting, my shoulders hurt a lot, like your whole body just hurts. And so it's the mental game of like, I hurt, but I'm gonna keep going. So I had a few mantras. I didn't really talk about that.
We'll get onto that.
We'll get back.
So leading up to race day, then you had all the things that you were excited. What did you have with you? You mentioned like you had a backpack, and you've mentioned food. So what did you have with you while you were for the event?
Yeah. So I was dressed in a lot of layers because it was spring in Wales and had no idea how it was going to go. So I wore socks, trail shoes, shorts, and then I had a long sleeve like running top on and a short sleeve over top because it was cold, and then I had a running jacket in my tiny backpack, and I also had a buff, which is like a headband thing that keeps your ears warm, and a hat. So that was clothing wise in my pack. I also had an extra pair of socks. I had a mini first aid kit. Did I have a head torch?
No, we didn't need a head torch.
Not that one. Okay, I can't remember what else I had. And a bunch of snacks.
Yeah,
had running gels, which at the beginning of taking them, I thought were the grossest thing, but then you kind of get to like them. which is just like a quick little energy shot. Consistency of like Jell-O, kind of. So I had a few of those. I had a little bag of like nuts and snacks and things. Yeah. Didn't take too much food that one because there was so much food along the way. So I just had maybe like a granola bar just in case, that kind of thing. And then obviously water. I had one of the packs, which is like tiny little pocket essentially on the back. And then it comes over strapped over your shoulders and has a water bottle in each shoulder pouch.
Mm-hmm.
So two little ones. So it was just very tiny, really. I had like an emergency whistle hanging on the front. I had, yeah, that's kind of it.
What was your number? What was the significance of your number? Why did you know that the day was going to go well?
What was it?
Uh-oh.
It was 72. Okay, I thought it was good because May 5th is my favorite day. I don't know why, but it has been since I was a little kid. It was just my favorite day of the year. I'd get excited for it, be like, yay, it's May 5th, and then it would pass. Nothing ever happened. But so the run was on May 5th, and then my favorite number throughout high school and what I would always go on a sports team or whatever was 72. And so I got 72, and it was on May 5th. So I thought,
it was perfect.
It's going to be good.
The stars were aligning. So okay, so how did the run go? What, like, the race director started us off, we all started running, what happened?
Oh, it was a laugh, wasn't it?
I don't know if everyone would describe an ultramarathon as the first thing they'd say is it was a laugh. I think that tells you something about
it. It was
how
actually so fun. Yeah, okay, so there was a big crowd of people, and they gave us the little briefing, and then they just off we went, really. James and I ran together. We were definitely back of the pack. We let you and the other folks that wanted to make good time sprint away, and we kind of just jogged along with the big pack. And then I think for the first 2 or 3 kilometers, it was quite a big pack. And
yeah,
then,
it was along a cycle path.
Yeah, and then gradually people spread out and got in a little groove, and off we went. Yeah, so that first bit, we were... it was through forest, and there was bluebells everywhere.
Mm.
And when I said, yeah, we were having a laugh, we really were just having a laugh. It was it was very fun. We were chatting and getting to know people. And we started running alongside some groups. And some of the trails were very kind of one in front of the other. what's that called?
Narrow?
Yeah,
single track?
Yeah, narrow single track. Yeah, so whoever you're running behind, you kind of just ran behind them. So you'd pass people at gates or whatever, except we were very much getting past and not passing. But we would see the same few people over and over. And so gradually we got into conversations with them and talked about where we were from and why we did it and if it was our first ultra and all that kind of thing.
It was a really supportive community.
Yeah,
wasn't
it? It was. It was so cute. And we had come from Birmingham to South Wales, and we had definitely come probably some of the farthest way.
Yeah.
It was quite a local race. Lots of local running clubs were there. And so it was kind of fun to just hear everyone's story and just go. I remember getting to the first checkpoint, which was the 11 kilometers, and like, wow, 11 done, like 39 left or whatever. Like, I could do this thing. And I was uploading photos to my story the whole time. And it was just a funny, funny time. It was in really nice weather.
Yeah, it was perfect,
sunny.
Eh?
And yeah, so at the first checkpoint, one of the guys that we were running with, his girlfriend at the time and mum, now wife, I say, they were there kind of cheering us on. So they waited till we were the last ones to come through the checkpoint. But they took my raincoat and my t-shirt because it was too warm out, so I was just running in my base layer, which was great. And we had tons of great snacks, so the checkpoints were amazing.
Oh, it was like a little kid's picnic.
Oh my goodness, it was so fun. Candies and chocolate and fruit and little pizzas and little sausage rolls and all the good stuff.
Custard cream.
Oh yeah, juice, coke, water obviously. So we would have a we would have a nice little break every checkpoint. James and I would take off our packs and have a little stretch and chat with the volunteers and eat and then off we'd go. So 5 or 10 minutes almost at each one. And it was a there and back. So the halfway point was 25 kilometers, and then you just turn around and do it in reverse. So you got to go to all the checkpoints twice. Yeah, and it was just fun. The first half was great, I would say. Like, that was well within kind of our capabilities and our comfort zone of what we'd been able to do. And then turning around felt awesome because it's like, right, we're on our way back now. Like, we've gone as far as we'll go, and now we're just going back. But then also it got a lot harder on the way back. Our muscles were quite sore already. I don't know what else.
So what was the hardest thing about it? What did you find the most tough?
The most tough was probably on the way back after. So we had a good stop at the halfway point and then turned around and came back. And so that next, like up to 30, 35 kilometers felt good. But then that next 10K, it was just, it felt long. We were going through farmers' fields. Everybody was really spread out by that point. So it was just James and I. We ran with another lady for a while, and that was really nice. Someone new to chat with. And just get your mind off of the fact that your feet hurt so bad.
Yeah.
I had a lot of knee pain in training, and I wore a knee brace during a lot of my training, and it started to hurt again at that point. I'd done a lot of exercises and stretching to try to minimize that throughout and leading up to the race. So that was getting sore, and also just the kilometers started to feel endless. It's like we'd been running for hours and hours. And we still had hours to go, and it got cloudy and a bit windy, and we were just like tired. James was really tired. He didn't train very much.
No, he didn't.
It's kind of like a one and done for him.
I think you got him round on that. I don't think he'll mind us saying that.
No, we had a lot of fun. But yeah, I kind of asked him at that point, like, oh, you know, how are you finding it? Would you ever do it again? And I think I was leaning towards, yeah, probably. And he was leaning towards, no. So yeah, he was dragging his feet a bit more than I was. And then I had to go to the bathroom.
Oh no. So badly.
And we were running through like a residential area at that point. And oh, it was really bad. Anyway, I found a corner, but it was hilarious.
Very little cover.
Yeah, well, it was kind of behind the bush, but then there was a very thin hedge into somebody's backyard, but there was literally nowhere else. And I was very much considering knocking on someone's door and just being like, please let me in. I'm running this stupid long race and I have to go to the bathroom so bad.
They would not have wanted you in
their
house. Smelly.
I was a muddy mess. This random... No. I snuck around and I dug a little hole and James guarded and I just went real fast and I felt so much better. But the few kilometers before I finally decided to just go for it were painful. So that's definitely a downside.
So what you're saying is is then is that like the start, the first half especially, is really fun. Like you're feeling great, you're surrounded by people, it's exciting, weather's good. But then as the run goes on, it gets a little bit boring. You're more spread out, so there's less chatter with people.
Yeah.
Things start to hurt a little bit more, so maybe less positive.
Yeah.
So what keeps you going at that point?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I had some mantras that I would say in my head, and that's kind of where the mental training comes in. And you really have to do a lot of positive self-talk and just not let yourself go down rabbit trails. So I think I listened to a lot of music training. I didn't listen to any music on the run. First of all, I thought my phone would die, and I really wanted the Strava evidence because I thought this was going to be like the longest ever run. Like, I want to have a record of it. And also we were just chatting and talking and putting headphones in, definitely discourages that. So we didn't really have that. So it was all just about self-talk, I would say.
Yeah.
So I picked a few mantras, and it just happened kind of naturally, things I would say to myself in training over and over and over when things really started to hurt or when I was like pushing up a big hill. So during my training, I think the main one I used was pain is progress. And so I just, every time it was really hurting, I would just kind of imagine my muscles breaking down and saying they're going to grow back stronger. Like pain, like the more pain I'm in now, the better I'm going to be. And it really turned the pain into a positive thing. Well, sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. And so just trying to rewire my own brain to not see pain as danger, which is what we're naturally inclined to think, is like that when we touch something and it hurts, we draw our hand back. Like our body's natural response is to avoid pain at all costs. And so you really have to train your brain to be like, no, it's okay, like I can keep going, and your body can do way more than what you think it can. It just hurts. And so if you can get past the pain barrier and just be like, no, pain is not the enemy, which is another thing I said to myself a lot, like pain is not the enemy, like pain is progress.
That's so good.
Yeah, so that helped in the training. And then I think it sounds so simple, but on race day I was just keep going, and I went into it thinking I'm going to run all day long. Like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm not looking at my watch. I wasn't timing. I had no goals of, like, when I wanted to be at certain checkpoints. I was in my head. It's just, like, if it takes all day, it takes all day. And there was a cutoff, but it was, like, 10-odd hours.
Oh, yeah.
You could just about walk the entire thing. Like, you probably had to run a few things. But there was also a lot of downhill, which are easy to run. So I knew at least if I ran half of it, I'd make it. And so in my head, I didn't have any goals on timing. It's just, like, just keep going. And stop when you needed to stop. I took lots of breaks. If I was hurting, I would stop and stretch it out. And James was totally on board with that. So both of us, I think, had times where we were like, oh, I'm tired, I need to slow down. Like, if you want to keep going without me, go. And both of us were like, nah, well, we've gone together. Let's just do this thing. And which was so good. I think had I been running alone, it would have been a lot harder. I'd probably been a lot slower or just a lot more grumpy. But yeah, we were in this thing. We had to get back somehow. So it was just keep going. Just one more step. Each step is closer to the finish line. And don't worry too much about like tracking kilometers, which we definitely were by the end. And Strava said that the race was 52 kilometers. And let me tell you, when it said that I'd run 50 kilometers and we weren't back to the finish line yet, we were very grumpy. We've run 50 kilometers. The race is 50. Let's just stop here. Like, we did it. This is stupid. And it was that stupid paved section where you're running through kind of a like residential area again, and just pavement. And actually two kids on their bicycles came up beside us, and we were very much the only ones running. No one was behind or in front of us that we could see. And they're like, what you guys doing?
That's
really
funny.
They chatted to us for about 500 meters, and that was kind of fun. So that was a good time.
It's funny because in shorter events, things like 10k, half marathon, even like marathon especially, like everyone who runs them is so they want the race to be exactly that length, and if it's a step more than that, then people get upset about that. But ultras, I feel like it's fairly much more common for an event to say that it's a certain distance and then be like slightly more, and I've heard some people describe it as like, oh well, you just get more for your money, you know, you're out there, you're getting further.
I did not feel that
way. You're not feeling that way.
No, and I guess it does depend, because there's so many fields that we had to run across, and it's like depending on exactly the route you took, if you went around the edge or just cut straight through, it probably, like, and Strava is not exact, so it was around 50, but I guess it would have been better to run 52 than to get to the finish line and have it say like 49.
Oh,
that would have been really frustrating.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about the finish.
Oh, the finish was so exciting. We couldn't believe we'd made it. The last kilometer was really hard. Like, we were shuffle stepping. Mm-hmm. Like, every step hurt. And every, like, we'd kind of slow to walk and be like, no, we can do it. We could do it. But it took a lot to keep a running pace. But we kind of were discussing. We're like, you know what? It hurts if we walk. It hurts if we run. We might as well finish. And I had a last resort granola bar that I had to eat 2 kilometers before the end because I was kind of passing out from hunger a little bit. And there hadn't been a station for 11 kilometers. And we'd kind of blitzed through the last one because they were, it was just lonely. We're like, we just want to be done. But I saw the finish and there was a bunch of people cheering and I saw your nanny and pappy by their car and they were clapping us on and being the extrovert that I am, I immediately sucked energy from all the people that I saw and I managed a sprint finish.
You were like sprint finish, massive smile on your face, like pretty much skipping and yelling
your way across the line. I jumped, my arms were raised, I was like, yeah! Yeah, I lost James in the last 300 meters, I think. And I leaped my way across. I got some epic pictures that made me look a lot more triumphant than I think I felt. But then I promptly collapsed. And you came and gave me my medal. And I had my t-shirt. And I laid on the ground for a while and then took some photos and whatever. But yeah, no, that was fun because the photographer came up to me later and gave me my nickname, the happiest ultra runner. Because we'd seen the photographers a few times around the track, and every time I saw one, if I was walking or limping or grumpy, I'd made sure like to put a big smile on my face and kind of like pick up the pace.
And you'd like banter back and forth with them, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, we had some good little banter and just because I'd make funny faces at them or whatever, and so I had the photos of me in the archives are quite hilarious. Yeah, it was a good time.
Oh, that's fun. Just thinking back on it, like, you know, again, just so proud of you and where you sort of, you came and where you got to in the length of time that you did. I mean, going from, like you say, 4 kilometres in the start of January to being able to do that was incredible. And just, I love looking back at the pictures because it really looks like you're having a good time. How was the recovery? So I guess like later on that day, how did you feel by that night, next morning, and then kind of I guess the couple of days following?
Yeah, so immediate recovery. I mean, we felt pretty low and our bodies just hurt. And we just kind of crashed that evening. I think we went and got pizzas and all this stuff and I didn't end up being able to eat that much. And we just crashed into bed, which felt great for a few hours. But then the lactic acid buildup, and our muscles screamed through the night. We didn't actually get a good night's sleep, did we?
Oh, no, like, you get terrible up. Night's sleep.
Yeah, it just hurt so bad. So we took some painkillers in the middle of the night and drank lots of water and made it through. But then by the next morning, it was okay. We had a massive breakfast. We were so hungry.
But do you remember, you say it was okay, but because we went out for breakfast, we had a nice big brunch, and there was like the slightest of inclines from the car park up into the pub, like it, you wouldn't even thought it was an incline.
We were very stiff.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
trying to get up that the path was excruciating,
and we were hobbling quite a bit, like old men. And I think we joked with the waitresses when we went out for a big breakfast because we just looked hilarious, the three of us. Very, very stiff. And then we were sore for quite a few days after. Mm-hmm. And I think we kind of got sick that weekend a little bit, or we just felt sick. Like, it just took everything out of our bodies. And that weekend, the rest of the weekend, we really did lay on the couch and just felt drained. And my feet were a mess. That's not something I talked about at all, but I lost a lot of toenails in training. My feet, like, blisters was fine, all that kind of thing was fine, but my toes just did not like the impacts. And I got good shoes, they fit well, all that stuff, all the normal stuff, but they just continued to fall off. And so a few of my toenails were like big and black and fell off. It was quite gory. But yeah, so that part was the worst part of the recovery, I think.
That, yeah, and that was one of your least favorite things with ultra running, wasn't it? Was the impact on your toenails? Like, you hated running in the rain. But that was a temporary thing, yeah. Obviously, just when you were out, and then you really didn't like the impact on your feet.
Yeah, well, they took months.
Lasting. Yeah.
Yeah, months to grow back. And then when they did grow back, they were super funky. They look normal now. It definitely, everything goes back to normal. But yeah, I had to bandage them for quite a while. And like, I'm a teacher, and we were doing swimming and swimming lessons. And I got in the pool with my kids one day, and a kid stepped on my foot and like took the whole nail and nail bed off. And it was a bloody mess, and it was so horrible. Anyway, that's another story. But yeah, it just impacted multiple areas of my life, yeah. I think, the toenail thing. And I couldn't wear sandals for a long time.
Yeah, so you, like, after that experience, you know, you kind of, you're finished that. You've been, you know, very successful, I think, for a first ultra.
Yeah,
you have to say to somebody who is maybe in a similar position, not a huge runner, but like wants to push and challenge themselves, what would you tell them, like, in terms of expectations or like how to go about the whole experience?
Yeah, I would say go for it. If you're willing to push through pain, like, it's not that hard. I don't want to say that. It is very difficult and it hurts, but you can do it, and your body can do much more than we think, I think. And it was a good time. It's also just chill. Like, it was slow. You just kind of jog along. So if you like to hike, if you like big days out, it's so much easier than like pushing at like times for a half marathon, because that it's exhausting the whole time. Whereas ultra running, you can just have a chat, you get to eat, you get breaks. And like, you took, what was your time for the 50k? 50
just under 6 hours,
minutes and 5 hours. That was the weirdest way of saying that, but yeah. And I think I took 7.5 hours. So if you're kind of okay with the idea of just being out for 7.5 hours, it's great. Also, so much more beautiful than city runs. Like, yeah. We got into some beautiful area and covered so much distance, and we were able to do so much. And we've done other long distances since, which we won't talk about now. But it's just, yeah, you get beautiful scenery.
You do.
Make sure your shoes are good, and then go for a run.
Yeah, there's a lot of walking in ultra running. And so, like, certainly up most hills you end up walking,
yeah.
And it is just a chiller pace, and it's just a different kind of pain than yeah, if you're trying to like flog it for a fast 10k or half marathon.
Yeah, I've never done a half marathon or a marathon on the roads, and I'm not sure I would want to, because it's just so full on.
Yeah,
but I would probably do another ultra, because I like to hike, because we like big days out in the hills, and it felt a lot more like that, just slightly more intense and concentrated.
Yeah. So I think, like, the last thing about, just in terms of if someone is thinking about or considering their first ultra, I think race selection is important, yeah, as well. So doing your homework in terms of, this is a race that is supportive, it'll be safe, the route is marked out, and the terrain is not too brutal, because there's massive variation and in the quality of the trail and the difficulty and the technicality of the terrain. So that first one that we did was really good underfoot for us as first timers.
Yeah, because I did another one a few months later, and it was the hardest thing I've ever done. And it was, I was more trained. I'd run longer distances by then. Like, it was a shorter race, but it was so hardcore.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit more about then that second ultra that you did. So it was a couple of months later.
Yeah.
It was in the Peak District this time, rather than South Wales. So the hills were very dramatic, much taller, much bigger. The terrain was a lot harder. It was a lot more rocky. You were also alone for a lot more of the time.
I was alone pretty much the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that change the experience? Kind of talk us through that second event, and sort of how it went by comparison.
Okay. Yeah. So it was 46 kilometers. So just marginally shorter. And so I guess the mental game on one hand was easier, because I'd run farther than that before, so I knew I could get round. We'd kept up our training a little bit, so I knew I was able to do it. I knew what getting halfway through felt like, and there definitely is kind of a boost of thinking like, oh, I've done this before, like, well, I'll just get out there and run, and it's gonna take all day, and off I go. But it was way more dramatic. I was alone. So that was challenging. I listened to music, I think, after 35K. So I listened to music the last 10K to get me round. I had a different mantra for that one. So the tricky thing about that race is that there was three or four races, distances going on at the same time.
Yeah.
So there was like a 10K distance, which was just a little short route. There was kind of a half marathon distance. There was the one we were doing, which was the 46. So just longer than a marathon. They called it the marathon distance. And then there was a really long one, the ultra extreme one. But the thing was, we all started at the same time at the same spot, which meant that I was setting off with people that were just running 10K or just running half a marathon. And you can set off at such a faster pace if that's all you're doing, because you can... Hello, Rowan. You can blitz it and be fine 10K later. But when you're in it for the long run... you have to just run a totally different race. So my mantra for that race was run your own race. It's so easy to compare yourself and have so many people passing you and get really frustrated. So I just told myself over and over, run your own race. Like, this is you. Mm-hmm. You're in this for a long time. You're your own runner. Just don't, it's not a competition. Just get round. And that was really important, the first 20K. After that, our paths split, everybody else was kind of done, and then all of a sudden I found myself so alone. Yeah. There was this one Y where all the shorter distance runners peeled off, and I just watched all the people that were around me peel off, and then me and this one other guy kind of straight on, and that was
crazy. So what you're saying then is for those first, however long it was up to that Y, you were pacing alongside people who were doing a race half the distance as you.
Well, I wasn't pacing alongside them because they were all passing me, so I probably got like the people that I actually split off were like had caught up to me. Okay. And started at the back of the pack. But yes, so then I kind of realized, like, oh, okay, like, I'm here, we go. and that, then the next little bit was just hard. It was way out, and you couldn't see anybody, and so it was just really me. I had one or two runners that I could see way ahead of me, and one or two that were way behind me, and I kind of used them to pace, tried to stay in the middle of them. A lot of it was single track, like really muddy and boggy on either side, so you really wanted to stay on this tiny path, and sometimes there would be like a ridge on either side, so if you kind of weren't watching your feet, you'd knock your ankles, and so it was just a little bit painful, and like really, you had to really focus. You couldn't just plod one foot in front of the other. And then, yeah, the uphills and the downhills, like the downhills were just as hard because they were so rocky and you really had to watch your footing, and or they were muddy and I slipped and was up to my knee at one point. And so that was a shoe full of mud. So it was just hard. And then it started to rain at one point and I was getting a headache, and that was my low. That's when I put my music in. And there was this one guy that I was running with for a while, and then I managed to kind of pull ahead of him, and I used him as motivation, like, don't let him catch up to me, which is felt a little bit horrible because probably both of our spirits might have been lifted had we been running together, but I just used him to push. I needed something to be like, okay, keep going. So every time I'd get to a gate, he'd be at the previous gate, and I'd be like, hey, you need to get there before he catches up. And I put my music in, I put my head down, I put my hat on to keep the rain out of my eyes, which I find helps, and just one foot in front of the other, run your own race. Yeah. And then I kind of got a second wind the last 5K. The last 5K was all downhill, and I'm a pretty good downhill runner. I'm way better at that than uphill because I'm not as strong, but I'm maybe a little bit more fearless than some people. So lots of people were being really, really careful. So the last 5K, I ended up passing a lot of people, which was such a boost.
Oh, yeah.
So I was just like confidently striding down these hills, passing a bunch of people. That one guy that was tailing me was nowhere in sight. So that felt really good. And then when I could hear the music, oh man, it was, oh, and I managed another sprint finish,
yes,
which I couldn't believe it. But that, it was great. I managed a sprint finish. I saw Nate there waiting for me. I flew through the finish line. They put a beer in my hand. I whipped off my shoes, and it was great. And we lounged in the grass and ate pizza and drank beer for a good long while.
Yeah, it was, that was, again, so impressed with you for that. And afterwards, I mean, yes, that one was you say was harder, but you often say as well that you enjoyed that one more. And maybe partly because of the challenge, partly because of the landscape.
It was gorgeous.
I think that's the biggest success for you, is the fact that you actually did enjoy that one. Almost, you know, more despite it being that much harder.
I've never been prouder of myself. Like, I think I dug deep. And that's it. Like, I cried on that one at one point. Yeah. And, like, you really have highs and lows. Like, you dug. Yeah. So the last 10K was the hard. Well, no, the last 15K was the hardest. But then in the final few, I got my spirit back and managed to really crush the ending. And, yeah, people commented on my sprint finish, which felt great. And I saw people that I'd pass hobble in, you know, in the next 10, 15 minutes. And that felt good as well. Yeah, and so that one took me 7 hours and 20 minutes, so pretty much the same as the last time, which I was quite happy with.
Yeah, it's just, awesome.
Yeah.
So good. So where is your running now? What happened after that event?
Well, I retired. I retired from running. I thought, you know what? The only reason I really did that second one is because I had all the gear. I felt really fit. You were doing it, so I was going to go anyway. Might as well run it. So I pretty much thought I was going to be done forever. You signed up for another one in November. So that one was July. You signed up for November. So I did the half marathon distance because I thought, oh, I won't have to train. It'll be easy. I'll just take my time, which ended up being 30 kilometers of the hilliest, like the hilliest train I've ever done. It was like not so fun because I didn't really train for it. But it was gorgeous. So that was, where was that?
Dorset.
So I did that. But then after that, I solidly thought, you know what? I started January 2019. That was November 30th, 2019. So it was just before December. No one runs over Christmas. So I thought, you know what? I've done a year. I did a few ultras. Super. I'm done now. And then I took 20 off, didn't I?
And you had a baby.
And I had a baby. I did have a baby. And I didn't want to run while pregnant. So it worked out well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've only just started to kind of test the waters by running a few kilometers here and there, as we talked about at the beginning.
Well, thank you so much, Monica, for sharing that with us. That was
My pleasure.
It's so cool hearing your story because I think it is such a success story, and not a success story in that you won all the events that you did, but a success story in that, you know, you enjoyed these events and you didn't, you know, you didn't sort of hate yourself. It wasn't like a punishment. Like it but was yeah. No, but you look back on it with success. So yeah,
over.
I guess but just to kind of get to throw it out to the listener, I mean we're so interested to hear from you guys. So whether you are an ultra runner and have stories of really fantastic local races near you that are worth doing, we'd love to hear those. Or if you are thinking about getting into ultras or even just marathon running or anything and are seeking any sort of advice in terms of gear or nutrition or that kind of thing, we're no experts, but we're happy to kind of share what we know. So get in touch with us through Gmail. We are at picnicclimbers@gmail.com, and yeah, we'd love to hear from you, love to continue the conversation. So thank you very much, and we will talk to you again soon. Bye for now.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
If you enjoyed listening along, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment on iTunes.
If you want to get in touch, follow us on Instagram at Picnic Climbers or email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Until next time, Picnic Climbers.